as we just read in Matthew 24, okay, Jesus says, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. Now here in Luke 17, let's pick it up here in verse 26. Now as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it also be in the days of the Son of Man. They were eating, they were drinking, they were marrying, they were being given in marriage until the day that Noah went into the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. And in the same way, in the days of Lot, they were eating and drinking and buying, they were selling, they were planting, they were building. Now, it doesn't talk about any of the other problems that they had, does it? Okay? It's just talking about an appearance of normality. Okay? But on the day that Lot went out from Sodom, it rained fire and sulfur from heaven and destroyed them all. Okay. Let's ask some questions. If we look at what's going on today, would it be fair to say that that's what was going on in Noah's day? Would have to be. Now, let's come back to Genesis 6 here. I want to cover a couple of things. And from that, then, we're going to extrapolate. What was it like? All right. Now, let's begin here in verse 6, or 3, rather. Genesis 6 and verse 3. And the Lord said, my spirit shall not always strive with man in his going astray. For he is but flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. Now we know that they lived longer up to this point. So this is where God says he's going to limit fleshly life to 120 years. So gradually it came down. You read the genealogies after the flood and the age came down and down and down and down. Okay? To where in the days of David, it says that he was well stricken in age and he was 70 years old. Now, some people say that Noah was 120 years building an ark. Have you ever been able to waterproof 120-year-old wood? Do you suppose it took him how long to build the ark? All right, let's read on here a little bit. We'll see some things. Verse 5. And the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth. Now, what does that mean? How wicked is wicked that was great? What was it that they were doing? And having lived as long as they did live, do you think that they knew nothing about electricity? Do you think that they knew nothing about atomic energy? Do you think that it would be possible for Noah to have some power tools to build the ark? He's not going to do it with a chip axe and a handsaw. Suppose that's possible. They have evidence that after the flood, they had airplanes. And there's evidence that immediately after the flood, there was also several atomic blasts, which fused, I forget which desert, but fused the sand in a way that only an atomic blast can do it. So when Jesus says, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man, can we look at the things that are going on and say, yes, this is what they were doing then as well? Do you think that there were those who were scientists studying various things about the creation, animal life and human life? And what was it that Satan the devil told Adam and Eve? You can become gods by doing his will. That's the counterfeit of the family of God that God is doing. Okay? And living as long as they did, don't you think that they were looking for ways to even live longer? Isn't that what human beings like to do? Why did God say, I'm going to limit it to 120 years? What is that the wickedness was of man was very great on the earth. And every imagination. Now, let's understand this. When God says something, he means it to the full. You've heard me say, God's not going to fulfill prophecy to the minimum. He's going to fulfill it to the maximum. Okay? Let's apply that here. Okay? What do people imagine today? Look at all of what we call the high-tech devices that we have. And by God's standard, that's very low-tech. Makes you wonder what they had. Okay? Every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Now, what happened after the flood? Tower of Babel. Let's turn there. Hold here in Genesis 6. Let's go over there to the Tower of Babel, Genesis 11. Okay. After they were building the tower, and of course now the tallest tower in the world is in, what is that, Qatar or Qatar, I think it is, or United Arab Emirates? Dubai. Dubai. Neighbor. Cousin. Okay. Men have always wanted to go up. Isn't that interesting when his nature goes down? All right, verse 6. And the Lord said, behold, the people are one, and they all have one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do. Now, nothing. That means no thing which they have imagined to do will be restrained from them. So let's come back here to Genesis 6 again and ask the question. What is it that they were doing? Was it just eating and drinking, buying and selling, marrying and giving in marriage? Is that all they were doing? Doesn't tell us one thing about the technology that they had. It just is saying that the imagination of what they would imagine they could do, nothing would be restrained. Now, I got to thinking on this when I was reading the book. I forget the name of the author, but it is The Biology of Belief. Anybody read that? Okay. The Biology of Belief. Okay. It has nothing to do with faith, and yet it does a little bit. It was written by a biologist who was applying quantum physics to the cell. And he discovered that the life of the cell is in the outer part of the cell. And he discovered that the cell works almost exactly like a transistor. Open and close, open and close. Okay? And he kept investigating and investigating this, okay? And he was amazed. He says, every little cell looks like a universe when you put it under these high-powered magnifying microscopes that they have now. And so the long and short of the book was this. He was so in awe of all that was compacted into a single cell. And you know how a scientist said not too many years ago, single cell, well, that's just a simple single little cell. No. It's patterned after the universe. And it works, lo and behold, just like a transistor cell, only much more efficient. Transistor cell is primitive. Okay? So he said, after reading that, he said, we have the key to immortality. Remember the sermons I gave about two sermons about 5 years ago? The singularity is near. And I took 2 days to go through it, and I gave the handout from the book by Raymond Kurzweil. Oh, you're all blank stares, so I guess you don't remember. Well, he said in that, he gave the preview. We're going to hook up to computers. We're going to do that. We're going to do the other thing. But now we're really advanced. They're going to have such advanced computers. It's going to be something. Do you think they were doing that then? Let's look at some technology from the ancients on this side of the flood that we still don't understand. How did they move the stones to build the pyramids? How did they get the stones to build those Inca cities on top of the mountains, 12, 13,000 feet in the air? How did they get certain of the stones that they know were cut with precision instruments that are thousands and thousands of years old, that are still so sharp on the edge you can run your finger on it and cut it? Okay. Let's go back to Genesis 6 and verse 5 again. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continuously. What do you suppose they were doing? If we can use the pattern of what they're doing today and say they were doing it then, we might have a little better understanding. See, because the Bible just gives us the bare minimum here. But notice verse 6, how bad that it was. And the Lord repented that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. So what they were doing was tremendously evil. Do we have a clue as to what they may have been doing? It was tremendously evil. Okay. Verse 7. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I've created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, the crawling thing and the fowl of the air, for I repent that I have made them. Now that's a pretty powerful statement, isn't it? Why is he going to kill all life? Why was it necessary to do that? All right, let's look at what they're trying to do today. Now, we have a lot of genetically modified foods, don't we? Yes. They take a fish gene and put it in a tomato so it won't freeze. They take a moth gene and put it in a potato so it won't spoil. And the genetically modified food that we eat really doesn't digest properly. Causes a lot of sickness and disease. But what they discovered when they got into the genetic field, they discovered that once you get into it, it's very simple once you understand it. Once they learned how to cut and splice genes, that's how they developed some of these things. Now, it used to be if you had an orchard and you wanted to have, you know, special kind of fruit or special kind of nut like walnut, the English walnut was the best tasting of the walnut and the easiest to crack. But the bark on the trunk of the tree was not very strong, and in trying to work them in an orchard, you could reduce the productivity of them by scraping the bark. So what they decided to do was take black walnut trees, grow them up to a certain size, and then they would go ahead and they would graft in the English walnut. Later they learned how to take one citrus tree and put on it lemons, limes, oranges, grapefruit, same tree. Bad boy. Thank you for the air conditioning. I needed that.
I was about to go to sleep.
Oh, you were? Okay. True confession, thank you. Okay. All right. Then they learned how to clone. People said, oh, you know, they'll never clone an animal. But they did. They cloned a sheep. What else have they done? Let's read on. Why would God kill, destroy everything but Noah and his family? We can only speculate. That's why I rang the bell to start, okay? But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man and perfect in his generations. And Noah walked with God. What does it mean to be perfect in the generations? That means perfect in the genealogy. Why would that be emphasized? Did it have anything to do with what men were doing? Could it be that they were mingling animal and human genes and producing weird species? Can we answer that by looking at what they're doing today? How many here are online? Okay, good. Go download transhumanism. Download anything on transhumanism. That's what they're doing today. They want to mix animal and human genes. And just like they found out with the genetically modified food, once you get it into the gene pool, it remains. Now, I don't know what they're trying to do, but they're experimenting with things so that they can make super soldiers, stronger human beings. Now, have we been programmed for this mentally for how many decades? Remember Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman? See, this programs the mind over a period of time. How about the movie? You remember this, Larry, growing up. We used to listen to The Shadow. The Shadow knows what lurks in the hearts of men. Yeah. No.
We're telling our age now.
That's right. We're telling our age. But how old were we when we listened to it? 7, 8, and 9, right? That was followed by Jack Armstrong, what was that?
All American Boy.
Yes, indeed. See. Okay? Yeah? Okay. So what do we have today? Superman? Batman? All kinds of things, don't we? What was the movie Avatar all about? Transhumanism. Mixing animal genes with humans. So I'm going to ring my bell here. Don't say I said, and this is not a prophecy. This is a question. Okay? Why is the final universal king of the world called the beast? Now, I don't know if we're going to live long enough. Maybe Laurie and I were going to go to our place of safety. And Dolores and I tease each other about our coffins. And we have settled on refrigerator boxes. Okay? We'll be long in our place of safety in our refrigerator box. Okay? All right. Now, what I want you to do, how many here watch football? Oh, come on. This is not a trick question. ESPN. Okay? Remember when they cut out of the commercials and start back to the game? What sort of an image of a person do you see? you see a man made up, and he's a super kind of person, right? A manufactured man. See how we're getting all programmed? See? Look at the movies that, I don't look at them, but just look at the ads of the movies that kids go see and take it for granted. Okay? What is it all about? War, the end of the world, the great savior strong man coming to rescue, robots, droids. How many here saw Star Wars? Okay. When we went to see Star Wars, our kids were just about the right age for that. Oh, let's go to Star Wars, Dad. Let's go to Star Wars. No, I don't want to go to Star Wars. Let's go to Star Wars. Okay, so we all went. We all went. Saw the whole thing. Kids were all excited and charged up, you know, and even got carried away in Pasadena at the auditorium. The first Sabbath after the movie came out, everyone went around and said, "Let the Force be with you." See? But the Force was from Satan, not from God. So we come out of the movie, "Hey, Dad, what'd you think about that? That was neat, wasn't it?" I said, "It's just a bunch of witchcraft. Demonism." "Oh, Dad." You know, was it? Yes, it was. All right. You remember the second episode of it? I forget the name of it. But that's when the master was revealed. The master of the Force. What was his name? Yoda. Who produced the movie? Spielberg. A Jew. Well, this is not against Jews. But why did he choose the name Yoda for the master of the Force? What does the name of God begin with? The first letter of the name of God is Yod. That's how you pronounce it. So here we have a direct blasphemy against God in the movie, and everybody's all excited. And then you look at this weird, stupid, pointed-eared, buggy-eyed little freak. You know, and you think, has he got any brains in there? You know, he doesn't. Okay, I'm bringing this out from the point of view that were they involved in demonism here? Yes, they were. Are we involved in demonism and Satanism today? Yes, we are. What does Satan always produce? The same thing, right? So why was Noah chosen? Because he was perfect in his genealogy. Does this tell us that the human race in general had become so polluted with strange genetic mixtures that God couldn't keep any of them alive? Man, beast, fowl, the crawling thing. Don't you think some parents who would like their child to be the greatest basketball player, if there was a way to get kangaroo genes, splice them in, make that part of the legs of your son, he could jump so high, he would be the greatest thing in the world. What if you want a child who was really, really smart? So they developed a new human brain, activated it, geneticized it, gene splice. Now, I know I'm thinking weird and way out here, huh? That's right. Yes. But how are we going to understand it, see? As it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the Son of Man. You go online and you download that transhuman stuff. They've been working on this for decades. Don't you think God knows that's going on? Yes, indeed. That's something. I'm going to give a sermon, bring these things up again. I've got some of the material on transhumanism that I got just before I left, but I didn't bring it with me. I'm sorry I didn't bring it with me, but it's something. Okay? Just think, if we could create, they would, DARPA, how many have heard of DARPA? Department, what is that? Anyway, DARPA is where they experiment for super secret things for war. They want to create soldiers in the future that'll be stronger, bigger, need less sleep, think greater, and be more fierce. Could they do that? What does Genesis 11 say? Now nothing that they imagine to do will be restrained from them. That also brings up a question then. How much time do we have left? You know, those of us who came through the church in the middle 60s and early 70s, we thought, man, we're going to be in a place of safety. But look what's transpired since then. And we never thought it would happen, did we? So where will it go? I don't know. But I know it's one thing we should keep our eyes on and watch what's happening. So I thought I would just bring up these questions and spark your minds to research it and think about it. Anything that is really interesting, go ahead and send it on to me. I'm going to be doing some more research myself. And I think when you read those reports, I read one report, and they're way down the road on this. And so it just dawned on me. Why would God kill all flesh? Why did God send the animals to Noah? Because God would know their genetic makeup, right? So they could start afresh on the other side of the flood. You had to get rid of all of that. So I know that's a little wild and woolly thinking, okay? But it's something that we need to be aware that could very possibly happen. Comment was made about the Nephilim, which is the Hebrew for the tyrants or the giants. Men of renown, could that tie in with some of it? I think it would tie in with genetic modification more than the traditional Jewish interpretation that it was crossbreeding between demons and humans. I think,
just man-made.
Man-made, genetically modified. Okay.
What's interesting is the same Nephilim.
Okay, now, no. They didn't find the same Nephilim. They all died in the flood.
Well, I agree.
But they found giants that they called Nephilim.
Okay.
Doesn't mean they were the same. See, we can't necessarily cross everything that way. So, but it's very possible. See, here we're dealing in a situation that is information for us to watch and to look for. This is not salvational information. This is just information so that we keep abreast of the times and the things that are happening so we can understand it. Because Satan's goal is to try and make men gods like he wants to be God. See, he can't do it God's way, so going to have a perverted way to do it. See, that's why God has his plan. One final thought on this. When I first was thinking about this and how combining all together that with the biology of belief and how they're looking at the cells and things like this, that there is one thing that God did to put a stop to all of it, which is the law of sin and death in all of us. You can only go so far, so long, before you die, and it's limited this side of the flood to 120 years, right? Because what makes these men think that they are on the verge of immortality if they don't understand something about the quantum physics and the way human beings work? That they really are able to contemplate that they would do it. Now let's go ahead and cover something different. So this is just keep your antenna up and watch it, okay? Now let's come to 2 Timothy, the third chapter. 2 Timothy, the third chapter, okay? And we're going to go over a verse that we've gone over many, many times in the past, but we're actually going to apply it this time. All right, verse 14, 2 Timothy 3. But as for you, continue in the things that you did learn and were assured of, knowing from whom you have learned them. Learned them from the Apostle Paul. And that from a child you have known the holy writings. Now listen to this. What are the holy writings? The law, the prophets, and the Psalms. Okay? Now follow along here. Which are able to make you wise unto salvation. The things from what we call the Old Testament are able to make you wise unto salvation through faith, which is in Christ Jesus. Now let's think of a time as we turn to Acts 17. Let's think of a time that there was no New Testament. Maybe the Gospel of Matthew and the Old Testament. Maybe perhaps if you're a little further along, the Epistle of James. But when the Apostle Paul went out to the Gentiles, and he always began in the synagogues because it was to the Jew first and then to the Gentile, correct? Yes. All right. Now here in Acts 17, we find that Paul and Silas went to Berea. Verse 10. Acts 17 and verse 10. Then the brethren immediately sent away by night to Berea, both Paul and Silas, who, when they arrived, went into the synagogue of the Jews. Now, what's in the synagogue of the Jews? The law, the prophets, and the Psalms, canonized by Ezra. Okay? Now, these were more noble than those in Thessalonica or Thessalonica, for they received the word with all readiness of mind and examined the scriptures daily to see if these things were so. What were they looking at? They were looking at the Old Testament. And it's able to make you wise unto salvation through faith in Christ Jesus. So what were they reading? Talked about the crucifixion of Christ. Let's look at some of those scriptures. Let's come first of all to Isaiah 53. Now I want you to think about how these things might have appeared to Isaiah when he was told to write them. And we will also, Isaiah 53, we will also examine the structure of how some of the verses are put together in the book of Isaiah, and we will see some astounding things. All right? Isaiah 53. Remember, all they had was the report of the resurrection of Christ and his crucifixion. Paul was preaching it. He said, I was taught by the vision and revelation of Christ in Arabia. Now look what this says here concerning the life of Christ, concerning his sacrifice. Now today, Jews who deny Jesus say that this applies to the nation of Israel and the Holocaust. Well, it doesn't say we and they. It says he and his. Verse 1, who has believed our report, and to whom is the arm of the Lord revealed? So Paul would come along and he would talk about Christ. He would talk about the crucifixion. He would talk about what he went through. I'm sure he used these very scriptures here in Isaiah. Because you go into the synagogue and what do they have there? This is what they had. He shall grow up before him as a tender plant and as a root out of a dry ground. He has no form nor comeliness that we may look upon him, nor beauty that we should desire him. He is despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. And we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised and we esteemed him not. Now Paul could probably take this one verse and expound a sermon on it. Okay? And tell about the sacrifice of Christ. And tell about what he did. Let's go on. Bring up the subject of healing. Surely he has borne our infirmities and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. And that's how the Jews looked at him. He was stricken for his own sins. But he was wounded for our transgressions. So what you could do now, if you were Paul, tell them about Jesus was the sacrifice for the sins of the whole world. Come to Isaiah 53, you can read this section. You come to Psalm 22 about the very words of Christ while he hung on the cross. You can go clear up to Genesis 3:15, and you can see where God prophesied of his own future death. So you see, you can be made wise to salvation through what's in the Old Testament. Now, doesn't this tell you how much is missing when the Protestants say we don't need the Old Testament? See? Okay. And here's the same problem that all human beings have, right? All we like sheep have gone astray. We've turned each one to his own way, and the Lord has laid upon him the iniquity of us all. That's quite a thing, isn't it? Yes, we go over this for the Passover ceremony, don't we? Yes, indeed. Right here from the Old Testament. He was oppressed. He was afflicted. Yet he opened not his mouth. He was brought as a lamb to the slaughter and as sheep before the shearer is dumb. So he opened not his mouth. By oppression and judgment, he was taken away. That's what happened on the crucifixion day, wasn't it? They oppressed him, they beat him, they scourged him, had the judgment against him by the priests, the judgment that Pontius Pilate wanted to overturn, which then by sleight of hand was changed, and who was released to the public after Jesus was condemned. Barabbas. Do you know what Barabbas means? Son of the Father. Amazing, isn't it? Okay? He was taken away. And with his generation, who did consider that he was cut off out of the land of the living, for the transgression of my people, he was stricken. That's why he died. We have in 1 Peter, by his stripes you are healed, correct? We have in Romans, the 3rd chapter, that through the sacrifice of Christ and his shed blood, we have the remission of past sins, and we are justified. See? Took it upon himself. We know that he was the creator of mankind, correct? We also know that he created the angels. He created the heaven and the earth, didn't he? We also know that a third of the angels sinned under the one who became Satan, the devil. So what did God do? God was responsible for it. He made us, made the angels, created the universe. What did he do? He came to be the sacrifice. But what kind of sacrifice? Completely, totally selfless. He divested himself of his glory so he could become a man, retained enough of being God that he was the Son of God. And what did he submit himself to? To pay for the sins of mankind and to pay for the sins that Satan and the demons have brought upon mankind. And that's the whole story of the two goats of Leviticus 16. Okay? What did he do? He submitted himself to be bludgeoned and beaten under the inspiration and tyranny of Satan the devil. The high priest condemned him. Pilate couldn't save him. The people demanded to crucify him. Now, how does all of this fit into the sins of mankind? This way. He overcame the God of this world, Satan the devil, did he not? Yes. He, as creator in the flesh, did so. The priests then represented all the religions of the world, because did not Jesus say that your father was Satan the devil? Are not all the religions of the world of Satan the devil? Yes, indeed. So it wasn't just the Jews that killed Jesus. It wasn't just the priest that killed Jesus. The priest represented all religions. Pontius Pilate represented all governments. The people represented all the people of the world. Because all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, correct? So in that one day, in this one chapter, when you combine everything together in the fulfilling of it, as we find in the Gospels, God overcame everything, justified everything, and willingly submitted to that death, trusting in the Father to resurrect him. So we need to think about what Christ did. Now let's continue on, verse 9. He made his grave with the wicked and with the rich in his death, although he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth. Yet the Lord willed to crush him, and he has put him to grief. You shall make his life an offering for sin. He shall see his seed, because that's the plan of God, the seed of God the Father and the children of God and the resurrection, all of that's contained right there. He shall prolong his days, because he was resurrected from the dead, that the purpose of the Lord might prosper in his hand. Now see how much is in this one verse, this one chapter rather. And each verse, they are all loaded with great meaning and go through the whole texture of the Bible and the gospel. See? He shall see the travail of his soul. He shall be fully satisfied. By my knowledge shall my righteous servant justify many, by his knowledge rather, and he shall bear their iniquities. That's what he did. See, this is what the Bereans were checking up on. Was it in Scripture? Yes, indeed. Therefore, I will divide to him a portion with the great, and he shall divide the spoil with the strong, because he has poured out his soul unto death, and he was counted among transgressors, and he bore the sins of many and made intercession for transgressors. What's the first thing he did after they nailed him to the cross and lifted him up, he said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." It's not amazing. See, so there are many other things we could go through the scriptures. I've gone almost an hour. I suppose if you want me to go on a little more, I could show you a few other things with some of the other scriptures here. Pardon?
It's 20 to 3. You want to leave about 4?
Yeah. Okay, let's take a little break and then we'll come back for a little more, okay?